York. This is Emma Palazzolo. She has 15 months. We have a great speaker tonight. If you've never heard Chris, you're going to have quite the experience. I know I have. I'll give you Chris Raymer from, I forget what part of Texas. Texas. England, Texas.
Hate those long-winded introductions. He caught me mid-pee. So all of you that come up and shake my hand afterwards? Oh, y'all come on in. Everybody in one piece? I don't know about y'all. I'm wore out. Yeah. I feel like being rung through a ringer. I tell you. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. Got sober November 13th, 1987. And for that, I'm dazed and amazed. I'm a cat that could not drink. And here I am, 18 years sober. How cool is this? I got to thank, as always, this is my third time I get to come to Fellowship of the Spirit in New York and visit with you guys. I was a Saturday night speaker 5 years ago, and I'm honored to get a chance to come up here and do this again. And it's so overwhelming to get to see so many of you guys that I met 5 years ago, and you're still alive in New York, and this is a good thing. And but I want to thank Bart and Sal and Denise and Rick and all the other knuckleheads that had anything to do with putting this on. I mean, the work that goes into this. Just making coffee for this crowd, it just freaks me out. And I'm so honored to know these people and be buds with them. Food was outstanding as usual. But you know, you could travel all over Texas and not eat like that. You know, and we got it at a conference. It freaks me out. I've had so much rubber chicken in my life at conferences, it's not even funny. You know, and here we go. This is going to be a bear talking to this like this. This will be like this. This will be like this. I'm going to look at y'all for just a few minutes. That's the last time I'm going to do this. I guess they could be over here naked and on fire, and I wouldn't see them. So I got some of these big guys that are watching my back for me. If they start rushing me from this side, y'all give me the heads up. Come on, y'all know exactly where I'm coming from. So many of y'all I've emailed and talked to for years. I just got to meet some cats and from up norther than here. And my buddies, this is from Texas. We can say anything. This is my buddies from France, Simon and little. I mean, how cool, Daniel and the little Iceland guys are here again, and I just. It's just cool. That's all I can say. It's just cool to names with faces and all the little Connecticut knuckleheads, and I can't even hardly pronounce it. Here I know 4 or 5 people from Connecticut now. This is cool. I don't know. I want to thank Tom and Juanita. What I got to hear today was quite enjoyable. I got stretched and pulled. And I And I'm going to be on an airport bright and early in the morning, and I'll miss Ed, but I've heard him before, and he's the small, unobtrusive young man in the back. And he got in the front seat of Bart's car last night and bent double. I was like, God damn. It's just big. I don't know if this is any other word. You ought to be in Texas, that's for sure, right? I just need a big old hat, and bless you anyway. And I know you're going to do good. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed the service workshop we had today at lunch. I thought that was it was excellent. I am such a service junkie. I don't get a chance to get involved in it too much because I travel so much doing this. But if I ever get off the road, I'm going to get up to my neck in it. Because, guys, the future of Alcoholics Anonymous is in the hands of the service junkies, the cats that can do this. And any of y'all, I know some of you, it just bores spitless. But I might as well go ahead and get started in this. Alcoholics Anonymous is up to their ass in problems, folks, and it all stems from us getting away from our primary purpose, and we've got so many mixed messages out there, and if we're ever going to get this thing reeled back in, it's going to be at a national level. We're going to have some people at the top of this heap. I know we're supposed to be at the top of the heap. That's so not true. We're going to need these cats, and so anybody that wants to get involved, that's please, thank you so much for doing it. Every GSR, thank you. Honored to know you. Y'all don't mind if I take this off, do you? I seem to not be able to. I know, really. That probably didn't do anything for you, but Mr. Winky liked it. Y'all should have seen me drinking. I couldn't keep my clothes on. That's a fact. I just walk in and start taking them off, and I get a bad rap sometimes, and a lot of y'all have heard me talk about this before. But you know how that Chris is so controversial, and Chris is this. Chris, I got to tell you, guys, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing. I'm a member of Ingram Solution Group, where I hold a weekly commitment. I have a sponsor and have forever, and I sponsor a lot of guys, and I contribute to the Seventh Tradition, and I am just like everybody else in this room, and I travel a bit more than some of you, so what? You know, the most controversial thing I ever did is I married a Yankee. And Patty's here, and if you've never tried it, you jump in there, brother. Yankees are good, you know? I don't know what to tell you. My dad would be turning over in his grave if he knew that. But he was one of those Southern boys. If it's north of the Mason-Dixon, it ain't even worth talking about. But he never came here. I mean, I'm so exhausted. It'll take us a week to just come down from this trip, just the energy here in New York. And, you know, we got to play on the subways yesterday and the day before. We went to a Yankee game and got to watch the Yankees whip the butts off Toronto. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And you're right. I know. And the Mets are good too. And I got a chance to go to the Guggenheim. Got to met a buddy in the program over Friday morning, and got to go to the museum. And Jackson Pollock had an exhibit there, and he's one of my all-time faves, abstract artists, and he's exhibit through the 29th of September. And it was just what a cool thing to be able to see that. I knew that Jackson Pollock had died in a car wreck. I didn't know he was an alcoholic, and we got some information from this. And it's just, I sat there and got a little teary-eyed, just like I am now, thinking. I mean, he was one of the world's most. I mean, he was so out there in the 40s and 50s. He was just so out there, you know. And I know why now. I mean, he was. I just felt a real kinship to this guy, you know. And it's the coolest, folks. I'm not controversial. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm here to tell you. I'm not here to pick a fight or guys. I'm not. But I'm here to share my experience. My experience. And the problem is that my experience is going to be different than some of y'all's experience. And some of y'all that have heard me speak know where I'm coming from here. If you're one of these cats that just put the plug in the jug and one day at a time you've stayed sober, and well, hot damn, great for you. You know, this is good stuff. You know, it's just not my experience. And I want to share my experience. I get thousands of emails from people that can relate to what I'm saying. And I get a lot of emails from people that can't relate to what I'm saying. And I don't know. It's like somebody said at the service workshop today, we all get on the same page here, that all of us are going to be on different pages sometimes. And we all got here in a different path. And whatever worked for you, I'm so proud of you. I'm a big book thumper. I'm 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous trying to get sober, and I finally landed in a room full of people that loved me enough to just open the book, qualify me, show me how to work the steps, guide me to a spiritual experience, and my life has been wonderful ever since. And I know it works. I work at a treatment center. We get 1,000 patients through their year, and I know it works. Those that come through that hospital and leave and do what we ask them to do, which is work the 12 steps, get a sponsor, they get sober, stay sober. I don't care what other issues they've got, they stay sober. And the cats that don't. They want to blame everybody. I think the first thing going into this, before I tell a little bit about my story, we've got, how can I put this? There's a lot of hard drinkers out there that look just like alcoholics. My friend Danny up north of here says, if alcohol is your problem, then detox is as tough as it's going to get. You with me? If alcoholism is your problem, the battle is just beginning. And I think a lot of y'all can relate to that, and some of you can't relate to that because you're not alcoholic. You're a fruitcake. And there's nothing wrong with being a fruitcake. I like fruitcakes. But I'm just saying, what we've done, I'm watching the clock. Okay, because I'm not going to go over tonight. No, I'm not either. I can't do that. Y'all been through enough. In 1971, one of the last things that President Nixon did on his way out the door was pass a piece of legislation called the Hughes Act. Some of y'all are familiar with that. Hughes Act basically acknowledged alcoholism as a disease at a government level, which allowed treatment centers to open on every street corner. Insurance companies got real excited about this. Oh, this is good. We're going to make a bunch of money here. And they did for a short period of time. The problem was that a lot of these people that were open in treatment centers didn't have a clue. 5 years, I'm better on the cussing too. Y'all give me credit where credit's due. Screw ya. Okay, here. Progress rather than perfection. Okay, but here. But we got this thing called the Hughes Act, and we got treatment centers opening on every street corner. And what happened was that through the 70s and 80s, we had thousands upon thousands of cats coming in. Insurance companies paying like slot machines. Back in the day when I got sober, it was like 40,000 plus to go to a 28-day treatment center. And insurance companies were paying slot time after time after time. The problem was that a lot of these cats weren't alcoholic. You became alcoholic if you had an insurance policy. Before that, you were just a hard drinker. But now, you're an alcoholic. So we got a lot of cats coming into the fellowship. And I know this makes some of y'all uncomfortable. You're going to sit here and think, maybe I'm not. And I'm going to say, good for you. It's high time you thought about this. You follow us? Because here's where the controversy comes in. A lot of these cats came into the fellowship. I've said it from a million podiums. Women are damn good looking. Coffee's great. What the hell? I'll stay here. Better than the Rotary Club. better than any. I mean, it's just the bomb. You go come in and talk about your stuff and everything. It just, I'll stay. The problem is that those people don't have to work the 12 steps to get sober. All they get to do is go to meetings. They're the same buckaroos. They're the same buddies that are out there saying, just go to meetings and don't drink. See, they're killing people with that crap, but I'm controversial. I'd have never understood this. I agree with what some other cats have said today. Everybody's welcome in this fellowship, but I think you need to know your truth. And I think if you're a newcomer in this room, if you're early in sobriety, you need to pay attention to the fact that there are a lot of people out there that are not alcoholic. Carrying a big book, talking the talk, just like Juanita was talking about, talking the talk but not walking the walk. See? Because the book says if you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis, you're not one of us. If you can just stay sober today, one day at a time, and you don't have to work the 12 steps, and you don't have to have a spiritual experience. I'm sorry. I didn't say it. The book says it. You're not an alcoholic. You're not dying of a fatal progressive illness. And I am. And a lot of you guys in this room that I know are. And that's why I get so rigid about this. That's why I get so passionate about this. Because the message that can interest the alcoholic like of our variety, the book says it's got to have some depth and weight. And this has depth and weight. This works. I've never known anybody to come into this fellowship and work these 12 steps and not get sober. I've watched a lot of people come in and work them half-assed and not stay sober. This is an individual program. You can work this program any way you want to. That's not what my book says. I don't see how we can say that. Ed, we sit there and we read how it works. Half measures availed us nothing, right? We stood at the turning point. When we start talking about God, we need the spiritual experience. ABCs. We couldn't. No human power could relieve us. God could and would if he were sought. And then we come in here and tell the newcomer, just easy does it. Take your time to work the steps. You didn't get this sick overnight. You're not going to get well overnight. Sharing opinions. Everybody's got an opinion. Except we got this big book that we got 71 plus years. You know? Huh? Clear, concise message. So what a buildup to say. What a buildup to say. If I upset you, I'm so sorry. Going in the door. I don't want to do that. It's not my intention. Somebody guy up in Minnesota not long ago, some M state, I forget what it was, said, I think you like to be controversial. And I'm telling you, I lay in bed at night. No, I don't want to upset anybody. And I don't want to come down hard on anybody. Life's tough enough without having somebody in your face. But you know, I watch, it's back to my experience, folks. People watched me in Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years. And the best they could come up with was keep coming back. 90 meetings in 90 days. Guys, if you don't hear anything else I say tonight, I'm going to get on a tear here. But if you don't hear anything else I say tonight, please hear this. You could take exception with it if you want to, but I want to make sure everybody gets to hear me. Going to meetings and just not drinking will not treat alcoholism. I love meetings. I go to a bunch of meetings. That's where I go find new guys to work with. But if you think sitting in a meeting and not drinking one long, painful day at a time is gonna do it for you, you've been given the wrong information. And we got too many people. That's where my heart goes out to. I don't worry about the little bozos that snuck in under the door and can do it any way they want and manage to stay sober. Have a nice life. I worry about the poor guy that really wants to get sober, that sits in our fellowship and in our sister fellowships of NA and CA and CM, all the other 12-step fellowships, and sit in our rooms day after day, bone powder dry, miserable, suffering from the spiritual malady. And they don't. It's a needless suffering. They don't have to do that. But they yearn for somebody to give them permission to get excited about this program and do something different. We got groups in Texas where if you bring a big book in the room, they'll stop you at the door and take your big book. We don't want you to bring big books in here. We'll move to Texas. I don't know what to tell you. It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. Everybody wants to share opinions. And I just want to share my experience, please. I grew up in the hill country and down in Texas, down near San Antonio. They got Hunt on my name tags and stuff. I actually live in a little town called Ingram, Texas. And it's about 6 miles from Hunt where the hospital is. I work for a treatment center down there. It's been there for 35 years, and I've been blessed to spend the last 13 years at that hospital and get a chance to do big book with the patients. And in return, I spend my days toiling on the phone doing clerical work for that hospital. It's a great trade-off as far as I'm concerned, because that's where I got to meet so many of y'all. Thank God for 800 numbers and email. You know, it's just, I love you. And my dad was an alcoholic. Somebody jammed me a couple of weeks ago for calling my dad an alcoholic. God damn it, he died of alcoholism. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I mean, alcohol killed him. I don't know what to tell you. He died drunk. I've got an identical twin brother that's just like me. Some of y'all know Myers and the evil twin. And I've got a little sister that's a year and 3 months younger than me. She's never had a problem with alcohol. I've got a half-sister that's, they freak me out, you know. They're the kind that'll take that beer and be peeling the label, and I finally lose my... Are you going to drink that or not? Just go up to Lisa. Y'all heard me talk about it. Go up to her and say, Lisa, you want another drink? I'm buying. You want another drink? She says, no, I'm starting to feel it. No, me too. You want another drink or not? It freaks me out. It just... Bless her. She's never had a problem. That's where people, it freaks me out when they want to talk about alcoholism as being causal. Alcoholism and drug addiction, folks, is genetic. You're born that way. And that's a fact, folks. It's the verdict is in. These people that, somebody sent me this email. This freaks me out. I got to read it to you. Some of y'all will be amused by this and some of y'all will hate it. But y'all know that our buddy Mel G., Mel got his butt in trouble, you know, got caught another DWI, and he's in the ringer again, right? And so this guy, there's this great big article, but there's an excerpt from it. And this idiot from this treatment center out in California, it's a celebrity treatment center called, I'm not going to tell you, it's in Malibu, though. So. I understand he's gone to this treatment center. This is this guy talking that follows the Alcoholics Anonymous 12 steps, and I don't believe that's going to help him. This guy goes on and says, we understand that alcoholism is not a disease and that it's causal. And he's saying exactly opposite what I'm saying, but this guy owns a treatment center, and I drive a 15-year-old Nissan pickup. I don't, okay. I mean, who knew? There are only four causes for alcoholism. Four causes that could possibly cause alcoholism. First, everyone is using alcohol excessively has a chemical imbalance. With this? Good information to have. Second is events of the past that we cannot cope with, like the loss of a loved one or something of that sort, or it could be guilt. Or maybe we've done... Hold my call, please. Or maybe we've done something years ago that we can't forgive ourselves for. Third is current condition, like a failing marriage or a business of lack of respect. Aww. I've been telling people that for years. I just need more respect, by God, and I could do this thing. I know that one of them is that he believes he has a disease of alcoholism, which is probably prevents him from looking for the real reason why he drinks. See, it's causal. It's a causal deal. We find out what the reason. You with us? We treat that, and then we recover. And see, here's what I'm saying, guys. There's a lot of people that's true for. There's a lot of people that are situational drunks. You're in a bad marriage. Get out of the bad marriage. You're done. Here's my experience. My truth. I was in the food business for years and went to Houston and got an apprenticeship program and did great. made some money, and it was okay, but I was battling this thing called depression. What I didn't understand was that I was suffering from a thing called a spiritual malady, and I wasn't going to find that out for 20 years, but that's what was kicking my butt, and I'm not in a good spot, so I'm seeing a therapist, and I'm trying to change everything about my life because I'm convinced that it's your fault that I'm drinking. Just like every alcoholic and dope fiend I ever knew, it's your fault. Oh, God, and we're so disappointed. You know, we go to therapy. Mid-70s, I was in therapy. And for a 10-year stint, I was in and out of therapy religiously and benefited from every minute of it. I learned a lot of great stuff. But I was so disappointed. Every time we chased another thread, you know, down another little mouse hole, you know, well, it's got to be your childhood of origin issues. Well, it's got to be your mama. Well, it's got to be the girl. It's got to be the money. It's got to be the job you're in. It's got to be the town you're in. Jesus. And every time we would chase that, we would come up with what? For me, more alcohol. Guys, we've done this every time I've ever spoke. How many of you guys drank a drug when life was great? Let the record show every stupid hand in the place is that. How many of you drank a drug when everything was crap? Same hands. Y'all with us? Rich. Poor. Nice car. Bicycle. Good looking woman. Satan's sister. And we all laugh about it, but everybody wants to talk about this stuff nonstop, and it drives me to distraction. If you're an alcoholic, and that's why I'm so into this thing of qualifying the alcoholic, let's find out, because if his problem is really these other things, let's get him to a good therapist. Let's get him to do some good work around this stuff, and then he can go out and be a normal individual. He doesn't have to do this. I don't want them in the fellowship if they don't have to do this, because all they're doing is killing people with their crap. Makes sense? Early 80s, I married. I finally settled down. I figured that would help me. And like none of y'all have ever done that. And I'm married, and it's not any better. And I'm still drinking, and I've picked up some side issues, outside issues, and I'm combining it, and I'm going nuts. And a little domestic disturbance dropped me right straight in a therapist's couch again. And this lady was a low-paid counselor but she had a licensed chemical dependency license with her other stuff. And so she said, "Chris, I don't know about all this other stuff. I see that you've been in therapy for 10 years, and I see that you're taking at this time 3 or 4 antidepressants and anti-this and anti-that. And you know what I'm saying? I've taken handfuls of pills. And everything but Viagra. And I'd have taken that too if they'd had it then. But not today, huh, baby? I know. I even shock myself sometimes, guys. I don't know. But anyway... She says, "I see you're taking all this medication and you've done all this therapy and stuff, and I see this and I appreciate everything you're going through, Chris, but it sounds to me like, I could be wrong, but it sounds to me like you're a garden variety drunk." And I mean, I was humiliated. You know, I mean, I don't mind being borderline schizophrenic, but I mean, I mean, that rolls off the tongue a lot nicer than an alcoholic. You know, my dad was an alcoholic, and I'm not like that. I'm not doing what my dad's doing. And so... I went to Alcoholics Anonymous grudgingly and walked in the doors, and they said, "Do you have a problem with alcohol?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Welcome." And I remember sitting down, you know, and going, "Phew, well, that was easy. It's a piece of cake. I'm in the door. I'm in, you know." Jesus, help us. Wish I could skip this part, but you know I'm not. My truth. Maybe not your truth. My truth. My truth. They went around the rooms, and they said, "We got a newcomer in here. Let's tell them how we got here." Now, understand, I'm a functioning alcoholic, guys. I've never missed a day's work, one, drinking. And they went around, and they told all their little war stories about how many DWIs they had and how many liquor stores they robbed and blah, 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 blah. And I can't relate. I'm making a mental note. I'm smiling. Oh, ooh. Oh. You know, I'm making a little mental check. It says, "That's not me. that's not me. I blacked out. I pissed my pants. Check, check, check. It's not me. I understand why they were doing it. Identification. But you see, folks, that identification was supposed to have been done in a 12-step call. I'm sitting in a damn meeting. You've got my attention. I walked in on my own volition. Now, can you tell me how to get sober? Can you help me with some hope here? Nope. We're going to scare you a while longer. And people get cranky about this. All they hear from my talk is, you think our stories are not important. Never said that from a podium ever. Never will. Our stories, folks, are what makes us who we are. And in a 12-step call, it is invaluable. But guys, sitting in a meeting, you're pissing in the wind. You're wasting your time. We need to start talking about how we got a spiritual experience. Let's start talking about this God thing. That's what we're supposed to be doing. I left. I can't relate. Get drunk. Come back. Scare me out again. Guys, when we're not telling war stories, we're problem solving. Now, guys, I don't know what to tell you about this. Because everybody's entitled to come talk about their day. And I do. I talk a lot about my day. I talked to Ed on the drive over. We talked. We visited. That's what this fellowship. I mean, how many times today did I hear about people's lives and what they're doing and how the kids are and all the stuff? But you know, 1 hour a day that we have a chance to talk about something really cool called a spiritual experience. Why is it that we always end up talking about your crappy divorce one more time? Why is that? I get emails all over the world. Everybody hates it. I hate all that pissing and moaning in meetings. I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. But we still do it. And my question to us is why? Meetings were never intended for that. The big book says we set aside one night a week for the newcomer to bring their problems. And I think that's a stellar idea. One night a week. Why do we have to do it seven nights a week? Why? Or you got a noon meeting and you got the same 10 or 15 guys in there over and over. And y'all just want to sit around and talk about your day? What's wrong with that? Nothing. That's great. But if you got a newcomer in there, guys, and you think that you got the right to come in there and talk about your freaking weed eater one more time, you're wrong. You're wrong. You don't. We talked about the tradition some today. Traditions tell us that we have one primary purpose. What's that? Carry the message. Stay sober. Carry the message of hope back to the newcomer. One primary purpose. You know, I don't know about that. I was talking to Tom when we were over in the New Mexico State Conference and got a chance to smoke a butt with Tom out there. And we were talking lots about this. You know, it's like, I don't know about that anywhere here, but in Texas, you know, you come in, little crack addict sneaks into AA, you know, and his lips are all burned up. He's looks like... You can see him come in the door, geeking out, you know, looking out the windows. Oh, Jesus, look at this, the old big window, you know, and he's free. He's free. But we'll see him in the meetings, and what we'll do is we'll stop. Buddy, come here. Let's go. We got this thing over here called Cocaine Anonymous. You know, let's help you get connected to some CA guys, you know, in a fellowship that might be able to help you with a little geeking, because none of us understand the geeking, you know, we don't... You're scaring us. Well, see, but nobody has a problem with that. Everybody says singleness of purpose. Kick the dope fiends out. I don't have a problem. But on the flip side, though, but you can come into a meeting and talk about anything you want. How does your divorce to a 17-year-old kid in here drinking himself spitless? How is your divorce different than a crack addict coming in talking about crack addiction? It's not different. What ties us all together? The young adults in here and the old geezers in here. We got to give birthday chips out. 31 years? Who's the cat in it? Gee, I just didn't know you could get that old. I mean, this is... No, but what... Thank you for sticking. But what ties us together? Our experiences are all different, guys. Some of y'all talk funny, and some of you we need an interpreter for. I mean, it's just, What? It's just bless your heart. We all come from different paths. But guys, what ties us all together? What ties us all together is that we got a common problem and it's treatable by a common solution. And that's what we need to stick to. Because you don't know when the guy's going to come in needing to hear the solution. I hear so many old geese, no, I don't worry about it. This group runs them off and alcohol will run them back in. That's not true. We watch thousands of them die. We may have one shot at this cat. And you think it's your God-given right to come into the meeting and talk about your crappy day? It's not. What does it say on page 62? I said I wasn't going to do this, Patty, but by God, I am. What does it say on page 62? What's it say on page 62? It says that selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of our problem. Didn't say alcohol. Didn't say the cocaine. Selfish and self-centeredness is what's killing alcoholics and addicts. That's what kills. That what killed me 18 years ago and 18 years sober today. That's still the noose around my neck. Selfish and self-centeredness. And the only way I know to get away from that, the only way I know to get around that is to get out of my head and help you. And I got to say this in case I forget. Any of you cats that are not doing 12-step work, you have missed the gravy. You have missed the boat. To sit down across the table from somebody and start talking about a spiritual experience and watch their little eyes wake up. And I tell you, it's contagious. And you'll do it once and you'll never want to stop. And the whole time that you were giving it away, God was steady taking care of your crap. That's been my experience. We've painted this picture that some of us are going to be great at working with others and some of us are not. That's a cop-out, folks. Every single one of us. In Bill's story, it says that each of us in our own way are going to carry the message. Y'all are not going to carry the message like me. I carry the message like me. Ed's going to reach some people. Tom and Juanita, they're going to reach some people in their own way. Same message, but in their own way. And that's what makes this so powerful, because that's how God works with us. He'll drop a knucklehead right next to you that knows everything about your life. How did he know that? It's just the way it works. I'm still waiting to the day for God to send me somebody that's got has never had a woman problem and it has lots of money. I have never sponsored a guy like that yet. You know, they're always broken, just horny all the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. In 1987, I'm done with AA. I've done the 90 meetings in 90 days, and I can't put together 30 days sober. And I'm watching you guys pick up chips, and I can't pick up a 30-day chip. I have every intention of not drinking. And the further away I get from that drink, the more uncomfortable I get in my skin. And I find some excuse to get pissed off or to get frustrated or to get bored, and I say, I can't do this. And my head says, you could probably smoke a joint. Yeah, that's the ticket. Pot. Hate pot. Always have hated pot. Don't like the way it makes me feel? Oh, y'all have heard me 1,000 times. You little dope fiends in here that like pot. Who wants a drug that makes you horny and paranoid all at the same time? It's terrible. Just walk around rubbing all day long. But my head will say, I can't drink, but I can smoke pot. Now we're hearing the guys, you could probably eat a Lanista. You can't. Too many of us have tried it. You eat the sleep medication, guys. Our experience shows you may get away with it for a while, but eventually you'll wake up thirsty. We got a hospital full of people that lost their sobriety, long-term sobriety, around that stupid sleep medication. Let me run something by you. Could it possibly be that you're having trouble sleeping because, too much coffee? Or how about this? How about just a big old dose of guilt? Yeah. My credit cards are all maxed out and I'm cheating on my wife and I don't understand why I can't sleep. Because when I got sober, God gave me a thing back that I thought I'd lost. It's called a conscience, you know. And you start compromising that, and you're going to sabotage yourself. You know, and this, you clean up the mess, you work the steps, you get back on a spiritual playing field here, and all of a sudden you sleep like a baby. That's my experience. But I'm coming apart in 1987. I'm working for my twin brother. Thank God for any good families in here. If it hadn't been for my brother, I'd have been back on the street. And I'd spent time in and out, again, while I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd spent time eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. And it was one of those fresh, you eat out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas 1 month, and the next month you've got this great high-paying chef's job living in a penthouse in Houston. It's like, you know, we're up, down, up, down, up, down, but it's gradual descent into hell. And the depression's kicking my butt. And I left work one day, picked up a stack of return checks in the mailbox, and went and got a 12-pack and went home and opened those checks and realized I'd bankrupted another account. I'm 35 years old, and I'm psychotic. Y'all know that I'm insane. I got kidney damage, and I got liver damage. I don't know that yet. I'm suspect because I'm puking blood that there's a problem. I got about 40 pounds on me, and it's all right here. I'm swole. I am dying physically. But mentally, I am. There's a great line in the book, and the doctor's opinion says, our problems pile up on us, and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. You know, y'all heard me talk about this. It's just little decisions. What do I wear? Chris, you have 4 shirts in the closet. You know, and I'm sitting y'all know what I'm talking about. Red one, green one. All 4 Fruit of the Loom t-shirts. They're all the same. Red one, green one. Red one, green one. I can't decide. I can't decide which way to go to work. I can't decide what to have for lunch. I can't decide, do I feed the cat now, the ferret now, or do I, what? I don't, everything's piling up, guys. I owe everybody in the world. The girl's gone. The hope's gone. The dream's gone. I'm going to have to go to my sister-in-law tomorrow and borrow money to put in my account to pay for these checks. And I'm an adult, and I can't even keep a little crappy checking account going. And I'm so ashamed of myself. I've talked about this from a million podiums, folks. You tell somebody you're going to stay sober and mean it with everything in your heart. I know some of us have just blown smoke. I have done that too. But there are times that I went to a significant other, just like Tom was talking about, says, I'm never going to do this again. And then we do it. You know, and you get, every time you do it, you just get a little more hopeless and a little more hopeless. And you let them down a little bit more. You can't even look yourself in the mirror. Unless you've been there, that absolute state of just spiritless, you just lose your willingness to fight, your willingness to let it be over soon is all I can hope for. And I got up from the floor and went to the medicine cabinet, took a couple bottles of pills, and tried to commit suicide. It's an absolute coward's way out. And there's no suicide note, no nothing. I was so... Therapy did not work 10 years. The church, I tried them all. I've sat naked in sweat lodges. Which is a sight to be sold. I, the antidepressants, the pills. I'm taking 7 pills a day at the time, and I cannot level out. About the time those pills hit my stomach, I heard a voice that said, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." And I said no. I heard a voice that said, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." Heard it 2 or 3 times that night, and it scared me, and I made myself sick. And I'm still arguing with this voice. I live in an efficiency apartment, guys, the size of this podium. I mean, there's nobody in my apartment. I'm looking under the bed. Where did this voice come? It was that loud. It was that real to me. I don't want to go back to AA. I've tried AA. They're the nicest people on earth. I like them. Great fellowship. But this will not work for me. I have other problems. I am much, much deeper, much more sensitive than they are. What I didn't say and could have said is I am selfish and self-centered to the core, but I didn't. And I lay down on the bed and conked out. The next morning I came to and I heard the voice one more time, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." And I went to the doctor that day and I got some doggy downers to start detoxing. All my money's gone. I can't go back to treatment. I can't go. There's nobody to borrow money from. There's nobody, no girl to rescue me. And that night, I left the bookbindery where I was working with my brother, and at 6 o'clock, I went to It was an open literature-based meeting. It's a big book meeting. I knew that there was thumpers hung out there, but it was close, and I was just going to shoot by, go to a meeting, and then go on home and finish the job because I was miserable. And I walked in the back door, and they were, sure enough, everybody in the room. It was probably 40 people in that smoke-filled room back in the day when you could smoke in meetings, you know, the ceiling. And they were all carrying big books. And a little girl got between me and the door and said, "Sit down, cowboy." And I was going to whip her and then whip everybody else. If I'd had a gun, I'd have shot them. They were all laughing, folks. You know how irritating it is when you're miserable and somebody's laughing? It's like, duh, how can you do that when you know how bad I feel, you know? And I'm so sensitive, and I know they're laughing at me, and I'm checking my patch, which is perpetually crooked, you know, and I walk around most of the day looking like I'm wearing an earmuff, and I'm uncomfortable in my zipper, and I'm so self-conscious. And they went around a room, and a chairperson had seen me up there in North Texas. He knew me. I did not know him, and he introduced himself, and he said, "Welcome," and they got me a cup of coffee, and they went around the room, and he says, "Chris has been in AA for years, folks. He's been in and out. Let's don't just turn this into a first-step meeting and talk about how we got here. Let's tell him what happened after we got here and after we worked the 12 steps. Let's pull this cat with a vision." And he opened it up for this topic. And they all walked around. They went around the table. And that's what they did. They shared hope with me. Guys, it's the one commodity I didn't have. Hope. And they started talking about getting their credit cards back and getting in good relationships and buying houses and going back to school. And my little brother, you know, talking about the artwork. And one of the little guys has drawn in there. And he's took, I just, and all of these dreams that I'd had that I thought were gone forever. And now they're telling me, "Buddy, with sobriety, you're going to get some power in your life. Not only to stay sober one day at a time, but to kick butt and take names." They had my attention. At the end of the meeting, the old geezer said, "Chris, we got to ask you, are you done?" They did not say, "Are you done one day at a time?" They said, "Are you done?" The book is crystal clear about this, folks. We live life one day at a time. We don't have the power without God's help to stay sober. But we don't make a choice every day whether we're going to stay sober or not. And you better get on the same page with that one. We'll be in business. If you can choose to not drink and make it stick, you're not one of us. I have lost the power of choice in drink. It says on page 23, 24. The question that these cats ask each other when they first got sober, the question that Bill Wilson asked Dr. Bob, Bill D. number 3, "Are you done?" We've gotten so afraid of qualifying the alcoholic. I don't know if I am. Then have a nice life. But I'm not going to spend 3 hours talking to you if you're not. Make sense? Sounds so callous? It's not. I'm not going to waste my time on somebody that does not want this solution. Because we're not forcing this down anybody's throat. It's the most open, roomy fellowship in the world. You can pick your own God. You can work the steps at your own pace. For God's sake, do it. But you're going to do it if you're working with me. I asked the guy to come back. Ask me again. He said, "Are you done?" And I said, "Yes." And he was a big old guy. Not Ed big, but big. He's a big old guy. But you know how they hug. You never get a hug like you get in Alcoholics Anonymous. For a cat, it's just, unless they're brand new, and then they hug like they're fixing to break, you know. You know, but you got just a big old hug, you know. And I could feel. The guy had tears in his eyes because he had watched me for so many years. And he said, "Chris, I know you don't have the power to do this. And I know you don't know how this is going to work. But if you'll stick with us and do what we ask you to do, I can guarantee you that you will never drink again." I hear idiots in meetings all the time. "Well, we can't guarantee anything." That's not what the book says. Promise after promise after promise. You don't want to do dope? You don't want to drink? Work the steps. You will have a guaranteed spiritual experience. It'll be different than mine, I can guarantee you. But you will have an experience. God, I went home that night feeling the first time in my adult life, first time around Alcoholics Anonymous, some real hope. And the next morning I heard this knock on my door. Who in the hell is that? They'd followed me home the night before. They said they'd followed me home so they'd make sure I made it because I was detoxing. I was in pretty bad shape. But I know the truth. They knew that I had 24 hours to think about this and I was going to crap out. You know, I was already making excuses. Well, you know, I'll go Sunday. Not now. We went to a 10 o'clock AA meeting, and then after the meeting, they sat down and again, they went through the books, the first 23 pages, and they qualified me. Chris, when you put alcohol in your body, does you develop a phenomenal craving? Does that phenomena cause you to drink more than you intend at certain times? Yes. Have you been able to choose to stay, stop, and made it stick? No. Welcome. You're an alcoholic. You ready? Yes. We got on our knees in the back with three or four guys, and there was a girl in there, and we all got on our knees and did a third step prayer. They let me read it out of the book. And I got up and feeling at least like I was doing something. And we went to get some Mexican food and we came back and I'm heading for the truck and the guy says, wait, give us 30 more minutes. And they threw a notebook down, a little 70 count spiral notebook, and threw it down and says, let's start working on that old four step, shall we? And I said, let's not. And that was the pattern with me. I argued with everything. I don't care what attitude you bring in here. Just do it. And the miracle will take place. And I started working on a four step. 2 weeks later, guys, they've already got me doing in prayer and meditation. Exactly what Juanita was talking about this morning. Chris, let's start meditating. Let's show you how. Let's start getting this conscious contact with God. We know you're not going to get it right away, but it takes practice. It takes discipline. Let's let you start answering the phone out here in the front so you can see what this working with others is about. And I gotta help you with this, guys, because I hear it in too many meetings. Everybody wants to talk to the newcomer. That was way too early to be having you work with newcomers. On page 129. Now, I'm not talking about sponsorship. Guys, work through the steps to sponsor. You can't give away something you don't have. How can you show somebody how to do a four-step if you haven't done a four-step? And I hadn't done it yet. You with me? Bottom of page 129. It says, even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else. Can it with the come to meetings and not drink, guys? Let's start telling the newcomer what he needs to do. He needs to start working with newcomers. Be of service. Wash the ashtrays. Make the coffee. Answer the phone. Go pick up the books. Clean up the room. Do something to get out of your stupid fried head. That's what the book is trying to tell us. You can't do anything for the first 6 months you're sober. Just sit and listen. Put the cotton in and in. That is not what my book says. And these people knew it. And these people knew if they allowed me to be alone in my own head very long, that I was going to talk myself into going and do something stupid, because I'd showed them for 7 years that that's what I did. I'd spent 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous and never worked any of the steps. And now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and in the first 2 weeks, I've worked up through step four. I'm ready to do a fifth step. It's not a perfect fourth step. It was dang sure good enough to set me on fire. And I sat on the tailgate of my truck 2 weeks to the day from my suicide attempt, and big crocodile tears coming out of my eyes because I realized I'm surrounded by liquor and I don't want to drink. And somehow in those 2 weeks, because I'd gotten off my butt for the first time and become a part of this fellowship, the obsession to drink has been removed. And that's why when I stand up from the podium, I introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic. Guys, because that's what the book tells me. Introduce yourself as a man who has recovered. Any of you always recovering geeks in here? You need to finish working the 12 steps now, guys. I'm telling you. And you, too, can get well and go help somebody else get well. That's the greatest gift that we have. How in the hell can you help somebody if you're still sick? I don't know why that's so controversial. Book says we have recovered and been given the power to help others. And the minute the obsession to use leaves you, you're as recovered as you're going to get. Guys, it took me a year to recover physically. I'm still to this day experiencing problems with some of the substances that I took while I was out there drinking, and that's I'll die with it. That's just the way it is. And I it took me a long time to heal physically. It took me a long time for my little brain to slow down enough so I could start reading and comprehending and doing things. But the obsession for me was lifted very quickly. And I know a bunch of y'all in this room that I have talked to that same miracle has taken place. And everybody wants to make fun of it. Oh, he's just on a pink cloud. You can hang it about the pink cloud, folks, because there is no such thing. It's called God's grace. Amen. It is. I got to say this and get and move. I was laughing with a buddy of mine, this Danny Cat, this friend of mine from up north, and here's what's happened in our fellowship. Pretend the pharmaceutical companies came up with a pill to treat ugly. Which some of y'all could use. I'll put myself in that category. And for the first time in recorded history, ugly people had a chance of getting good looking. And those pills sold like hotcakes. You with us? But there was only so many ugly people in the world that could get to those pills. I mean, that needed them, you know? So the pharmaceutical companies started thinking about it. Says, well, we could sell these things to the homely people. But you see, this ugly pill has got some side effects, and it's kind of difficult at times, and it's rough taking, you know. But if we watered it down a little bit and modified the recipe a little bit, then homely people wouldn't mind taking it, and they could get sober too, and we could make a lot more money. With us? So they took the medication that worked so great for the ugly people, and they made it work for the homely people too. But now it don't work so great for the ugly people. You with me? Some of you I've lost completely. What the hell is he talking about? Ugly? Only? Y'all down with this? And that's exactly what we've done in Alcoholics Anonymous, guys. In 1955, we had a great success rate in this country. It's because we qualified the drunk coming in the door, we made sure they were ready, and then we banged them through the steps. Everybody worked the steps rapidly in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here to this day, folks, we've got so many people that have just been so concerned with membership alone that all we want to do is water the damn message down. Oh, easy does it. When you hurt bad enough, you'll work these steps. Listen to me. When I hurt bad enough, I go get a drink. Can we just get clear on that one? It's just absolutely nuts. A newcomer doesn't want to work the steps. I don't want to do this stuff that you want me to do. If I didn't have these old timers with a blowtorch about that far from my butt saying, come on, let's go, I never would have finished it. Thank God that they loved me enough to tell me the truth. And we got to take our fellowship back, folks. We got to stop worrying about the people that are walking on eggshells. I got still in meetings not 3 weeks ago in another town, sitting in a meeting listening to an old geezer say, listen, y'all just don't need to be talking about God so much in here. You're going to scare the newcomer off. Wait a minute, I thought it was God that got me sober. But you don't want me to talk about that. What do you think we're selling here, Amway? No. I'm going to talk about God. And you don't like it? You go someplace else. Because I'm not going to water the message down for anybody. You go drink some more. You get real willing to listen to anything. Arrogance of us. Let's candy coat this program. Let's water it all down so it doesn't make anybody uncomfortable. Well, I'm sorry. Anything this program has asked me to do is like kissing a baby's butt compared to what alcohol asked me to do. And thank God for the old timers that have hung around this fellowship and lugged big books in and tried to help us stay on track. Every one of y'all in this room, guys, I get a chance to speak in Europe sometimes and I get a chance to speak all over the country. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. This idea that this is some kind of an individual program is rampant. There are whole areas of this country that believe that you come to this fellowship and you wait a year or two. And then sooner or later, if you want to, you get a chance to work the 12 steps. And I'm here to tell you, we've got to stop this nonsense. If you can get sober on a non-spiritual basis, I repeat myself, you are not one of us. Please. We are here for the burned out, last gasping drunk. The cat that cannot stay sober, we've got the solution for. And I'm not going to water it down for some little disco drunk that happens to walk through the door. I want to touch on something that my new best friend Juanita talked about this morning, and Tom had mentioned it. One of the problems that we see in the fellowship today, and I've seen in my own life, is that when you get a little sobriety under your belt, you have a tendency to get struck with a thing called complacency. And the pain of my last drink is a million miles away, and I will never remember that pain to the extent that I would need to stay sober, for heaven's sakes. But I begin to think that my case is different, and because I've been in the trench a long time, that I don't have to go to that Monday night beginner's meeting, and that I don't have to get involved in service work and become a GSR and do all this other good stuff. And I begin to separate myself. And folks, I'm not one to really talk about this from the podium, but I feel compelled to do it. And I don't want to end to the part of the room that haven't been offended already. I mean, I don't want to piss you off too. But I want to say this. I believe that there's a power out there that's very, very bright. And I believe there's a power out there that created this universe that wants me powerful in this world, that wants me enjoying my life and playing in my garden and painting pictures and doing the cool things that I've always wanted to do. I believe there's a power out there that wants me doing more than just not drinking one stupid day at a time. And I also believe there's a dark side out there that would like me hamstrung, that would like me, here's the word, guys, ineffectual. Ineffectual in my relationships. Ineffectual with my money. I believe there's a power out there that would like me separated from this fellowship. It's the power that still talks to me some nights and says, you're not good enough. You don't need this anymore. You could be making more money someplace else. It's the power that wants to pull me away from the path that saved my life. And when I stop doing the work myself, I get caught up into that. Guys, at this hospital where I worked 13 years ago, every once in a while we would get somebody with long-term sobriety that had a relapse and would come back in. And I'm telling you, folks, I have dozens of patients in this hospital where I work now who had double-digit sobriety and lost it. And that's because somewhere along the line, they made a choice not to drink. They made a choice to walk away from this fellowship, to let somebody else take care of that. They left their spot as an elder statesman, and they gave it up to somebody else and thought they could live off an experience they had 20 years ago or 12 years ago or 5 years ago. Guys, you can't. That's when we do the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting. It's one of the best lines. Give me my bread, my daily bread. Which means I've got to have daily connection with God. Not something I had 18 years ago. I had a wonderful experience back then. Thank you very much. I've had a tremendous experience this weekend with you guys. I had a life-changing experience sitting in that museum at the Guggenheim, looking at that art this weekend, watching the Yankees whip butt. Guys, come for the ride. If you're sitting in this room and you're not enjoying Alcoholics Anonymous, it's because you're not in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're sitting on the periphery watching. Come in with us. We'll show you how. We'll get you connected. And I sure appreciate your offer to come do this again. Thank you so much for letting me do it. Bless you, guys.